All right, great. So I'm going to talk about partnership defined quality. And I have no financial disclosures, so that you know. And what I'm going to talk about, I've written out my notes, so I'm just going to read my notes to try to make it quicker. In this presentation, I'll be explaining to you the PDQ process, how it builds social accountability, builds social capital while improving quality, and how, at least through our experience at Save the Children, it leads to reductions in barriers to care. Save the Children developed the PDQ methodology in 2002, and since then has been implementing PDQ in over 15 countries regarding maternal and child health, monitoring and evaluation, and 3 years ago we adapted it for increasing youth-friendly health services. So what is PDQ, partnership-defined quality? It's a methodology that improves quality and accessibility of services with greater involvement of the community, and that's really important there, greater involvement of the community in defining, implementing, and monitoring the quality improvement process. So as you can follow along here, provider and community members who are both users and non-users, very important, together identify and address priority problems. And in the methodology, it's important to note there's a recognition that quality is defined by different people. It's, you know, it's subjective. And there's a recognition that providers and clients can work together as allies to address problems. And this really overcomes a lot of the blame that you see at the community level from community members against a provider, for example. And there's a process for identifying the problems separately, bringing the providers and community members together, and then you establish quality improvement teams that work to do problem solving. So, under what circumstances is it best to use PDQ? It's not everywhere that you would use it. When action is needed, not just information sharing. So often when a community maybe has a state-of-the-art facility, but people aren't coming and they just can't figure out why. When stakeholders, both providers and community, want change, so you can really feel the sense of readiness, that they just really want to improve a certain problem in their community. And when there's a willingness to listen and change how things are done locally. So how does PDQ hold governments accountable? You have marginalized members who are directly addressing duty bearers. This doesn't normally happen. This is an empowering and inclusive process that really focuses on including those who never have used health services before. The community takes ownership to improve health using existing resources. This means that solutions are sustainable. Client satisfaction and provider performance increase along with the overall health status, and it creates a mechanism for rapid mobilization around health priorities. So this is a diagram of the steps of PDQ. You start out with like a pre-phase that's not really here. It's like above the building support phase. But during that phase, you have the implementing NGO, in our case, Save the Children, that organizes to conduct the PDQ in a community that's surrounded by a given health facility. So that's the catchment area we use. So in the first phase, building support, the implementing NGO addresses community leaders and key stakeholders about this issue, whether it's maternal mortality or teen pregnancy or what have you. Do they feel there's an issue of quality or access? Have they tried to address this? Will they support us in the PDQ process? And that's an important piece because we come back to those leaders later on in the process. Then we move to the second phase called bridging the gap, during which we gather information from both providers and community members in order to gauge their perceptions of what quality services should be and what more they feel is needed to improve services for marginalized groups. The third phase is called, the second phase was called exploring quality. When we move to the third phase called bridging the gap, this is usually a one-day workshop to bring together clients and providers to listen to differences and then determine similarities in perceptions about what is needed. The fourth and final phase is called working in partnership, and this is when the quality improvement team is developed and they develop an action plan based on the findings of the bridge in the gap phase. So expected outputs from that process are these things that you see in these arrows down below, and it's kind of a cyclical thing because that phase just can go on in perpetuity. So you will see things like, and I have seen things like, increased sense of ownership of the health facility, improved provider performance, shared rights and responsibilities, better overall health, improved client satisfaction, and increased capacity at the community level for social change. So this is really huge. We've included PDQ for many years within health projects to improve quality without realizing or measuring the transformation that takes place because of this process. The transformation is often very sustainable years after the project has ended. We can see that not only does health quality improve, but there are checks and balances kept in place by the community to maintain that quality, and those are guided by the poorest of the poor. This is how PDQ builds social capital while building health quality. Once there is ownership of the problem, motivation for solving problems together increases exponentially. The momentum of this partnership can empower communities to keep working together on other non-health issues. So I'm going to talk really quickly about the example of Afghanistan. In the Access HHSP project, the goal of this project was to increase access and quality of safe motherhood services. And you can see, you know, we had some very low stats in the beginning. In the preparation and planning phase, orientations were held with provincial and district Ministry of Public Health and NGO staff, and we involved them from the very beginning in the planning. We conducted a community mapping to see where are the areas of low coverage, and we conducted data analysis and led community discussions. And then finally, we prepared an agenda for meeting with the community shuras, who are the male and female community leaders, to share the findings. And then we go on to the building support phase. Then we held a workshop with the community shuras, and during which we gained their feedback on the community mapping that had been done to just, you know, reconfirm the areas of low coverage. We discussed whether they felt that the access for women was an issue and oriented them on their role, and then we developed a PDQ inquiry checklist. In the exploring quality phase, we conducted focus group discussions with community members on one side and the providers on the other side. When we do this, we often walk the community members through this market exercise. It's really kind of cool. But it helps them to think through what the word quality means, because most people have never heard such a sophisticated word like quality. So we use the example of going to a market in order to get them to realize they might be able to demand the same kind of choice when seeking health services as they do when picking which kind of tomatoes to buy. We also point out that the reason you buy certain tomatoes may have more to do with the whole experience of shopping and the environment and how you felt treated by the vendor than the actual quality of the tomato itself. In other words, quality health services is a right that they deserve, that they can demand from their local health center. And people really seem to get it when we do that exercise. With the providers, we just ask them why they became health workers, and to get them think about whether they're really invested in their communities, or if they're maybe transferred from somewhere else and aren't interested at all. Ideally, they should be willing to help the people in their community. So we get into a discussion around patients' rights and, you know, what they want to learn to help improve the services. So in the Bridge in the Gap phase, this is usually a one-day workshop involving community members that were interviewed as well as health center staff. Planning for the meeting was done jointly by health center and NGO staff. And there you have, you know, the together, it's not a group from the outside doing this. They themselves are doing this. Both health facility staff and community presented their point of view to each other and then developed a list of joint issues using a Venn diagram. So this is where PDQ starts to be transformative and where the barriers that are determined by the community must be listened to by the providers because they're in the same room in this workshop. For the Bridging the Gap workshop, a skilled and neutral facilitator is essential in order to maximize honesty and sharing between the groups. You can see here the parallels in perception of concern between communities and provider. For example, the community members might feel that they don't know the services. The health workers may feel that health education is a waste of time. So the common issue might be that more health education information is needed. In the fourth and final phase, a quality improvement team is formed to prioritize problems that were identified in the Bridging the Gap phase and develop and implement an action plan. One critical piece here is that the quality improvement team must include marginalized groups. We often say at least 30% of the quality improvement team must include marginalized groups in order to maintain an inclusive approach. And in Afghanistan, it was a little bit of a challenge because we had to have separate groups for males and females. Here's an example of an action plan that was developed by a quality improvement team. And in this case, the problem that was identified was lack of communication between the health workers and the clients. But I always ask to see these action plans when I go into the field to make sure that they have a guiding document that they're working on together. So, accomplishments. In the case of Afghanistan, we saw increases in ANC coverage, deliveries by skilled birth attendants, PNC, and vaccination coverage. Without any measuring of PDQ itself, you might say that the process contributed to increased use of services due to increased community participation by those who weren't using services before. Although for Afghanistan, we don't really have a lot of hard data to attribute those changes to the PDQ process, there weren't other things going on in those communities, so it seemed to be a catalyst for those resources. And community participation was described as meaningful and sustainable, and it was actually scaled up in 13 communities. So in Pakistan, under the Paimon project, I'm going to show you very quickly some of the accomplishments that they had. An ambulance was procured through Citizen Community Board of Local Government, clean drinking water, dust bins, and communities were immobilized to collect emergency transportation funds. In one community, in the Northwestern Frontier Province, they provided curtains to the women in the waiting room to ensure the privacy according to PURDA. So there were a lot of things that weren't super difficult to do, but some of them required a lot of advocacy at the community level. So these are some of the results in PDQ communities versus non-PDQ communities, with significant increases in both outpatient visits and antenatal clinics. And then here we have the behavior of the health community providers and client satisfaction, you can see increases. So in Armenia, I'm going to go quickly to a few other countries with my 3 minutes left. Project Nova was a 5-year project focused on increasing demand, quality, and utilization of reproductive health and maternal and child health services. And you can see here the key objectives. The key interventions, after the 4 phases of PDQ, the key inputs included community education to increase community awareness and training of health action groups who actually did the outreach into the community. And here you see a health center before PDQ. And you have to, know that the context before PDQ in Armenia, which is a former Soviet state, the health posts were run by the state, so there wasn't any ownership. After PDQ, the community took ownership, and here you have the same health center after PDQ process. Let me see here. As you can see, there were sizable increases between baseline and endline in the utilization of the health post for antenatal care and the community's perception of increased quality at the facility. I actually visited those health centers, and it was amazing to see the change and that just feeling this sense of ownership. Now we move to Nepal. From 2003 to 2006, the Health Communication Partnership sought to reach marginalized populations with reproductive health and family planning. So, they focused on the two groups that they felt had the lowest coverage of family planning, which was the Muslims and the Dalits. And this was what you often see with PDQ. It's part of a multi-pronged strategy. So you see PDQ here in the red as part of many strategies. This slide shows inputs including simultaneous educational service quality, mobilization of Muslim leaders, linking the poorest with income-generating activities, and PDQ, which was actually seen as a catalyst to increase demand for PDQ. So you can see here the purple being the marginalized and the pink being the non-marginalized. So what are the challenges of PDQ? It's an intensive, time-consuming process. One of our staff in the Pakistan experience was quoted as saying that to involve the least advantaged people in the planning, an ideological shift was required on the part of the program implementers. Other challenges including maintaining political will and process, identifying the right facilitators that aren't going to, offend people, frequent transfers of health staff, and trying to gain true representation and participation at all levels. So in conclusion, what we know from these experiences is that PDQ communities have improved provider performance and increased client satisfaction. The fact that problems are resolved together by marginalized groups working together with providers has improved communication and collaboration so that those marginalized people feel that their voices are heard and so that there is less of a feeling of social exclusion. This collaboration results in self-reported empowerment and a sense of pride among these groups. There is some evidence of sustainability, although evaluations that have been conducted look at the overall quality and not the mechanisms that increase that quality. In Armenia, we went back 3 years after the project had ended, and the quality improvement teams were still working and solving new problems. And one was working on constructing a daycare center for the community, so it wasn't a health-related issue at all. We have just started using the PDQ specifically to measure that process. We've developed a monitoring and evaluation toolkit that looks at the functioning of the QIT teams, how the members of those teams feel included. And we look at specific indicators of community capacity, like gender equity, participation of marginalized groups, rotational leadership, group cohesion, and generation of internal and external resources. So what is needed? While there's no disputing that PDQ promotes social accountability and addresses social determinants, it's often used together with other methods and not measured for its own unique contribution to improving quality and access for non-users. Although we know anecdotally that there is a transformation that happens when people are empowered, it's difficult to pinpoint what exactly should be measured. And for that, more rigorous evaluation of PDQ alone and as a complement to other methods is needed to demonstrate effectiveness. The final slide is just a list of the resources that we have in my email if you have any questions. Thank you very much.